ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Ije chakra tu virgo raya Dikshita pasumarakai Devan pitrin bhutapatin Nana kamo yatha bhavan The great sage Narada continued, My dear King Prachini Barhishat, like you, King Puranjan also became implicated in so many desires. Thus he worshipped demigods, forefathers, and social leaders with various sacrifices, which were all very ghastly, because they were inspired by the desire to kill animals. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, the great sage Narada discloses that the character of Puranjan was being described to give lessons to King Prachini Barhishat. Actually, the entire description was figuratively describing the activities of King Prachini Barhishat. In this verse, Narada frankly says, like you, yatha bhavan, which indicates that King Puranjan is none other than King Prachini Barhishat himself. Being a great Vaishnav, Narada Muni wanted to stop the animal killing and sacrifices. He knew that if he tried to stop the king from performing sacrifices, the king would not hear him. Therefore, he is describing the life of Puranjan. But in this verse, he first discloses the intention, although not fully, by saying, like you. Generally, the Karmis who are attached to increasing descendants have to perform so many sacrifices and worship so many demigods for future generations, as well as to satisfy so many leaders, politicians, philosophers, and scientists to make things go on properly for future generations. The so-called scientists are very eager to see that future generations will live very comfortably. And as such, they are trying to find different means of generating energy to drive locomotives, cars, airplanes, and so on. Now they are exhausting the petroleum supply. These activities are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Vyavashayatmaka budhir Ekeha kurunandanaha bahushaka hyanantascha budhayo vyavashayanam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Text 41. Actually, those who are in knowledge of everything are determined to execute Krishna consciousness. But those who are rascals, mudha, sinners, duskritinaha, and the lowest of mankind, naradhama, who are bereft of all intelligence, mayaya parita jnana, and who take shelter of the demoniac way of life, asuram bhavamashritaha, are disinterested in Krishna consciousness. As such, they become implicated and take on so many activities. Most of these activities center around the killing of animals. Modern civilization is centered around animal killing. Carmis are advertising that without eating meat, their vitamin value or vitality will be reduced. So to keep oneself fit, to work hard, one must eat meat. And to digest meat, one must drink liquor. And to keep the balance of drinking wine and eating meat, one must have sufficient sexual intercourse to keep fit, to work very hard, like an ass. Should I repeat that? There are two ways of animal killing. One way is in the name of religious sacrifices. All the religions of the world, except the Buddhists, have a program for killing animals in places of worship. According to Vedic civilization, the animal eaters are recommended to sacrifice a goat in the temple of the goddess Kali. Under certain restrictive rules and regulations, and eat the flesh. Similarly, they are recommended to drink wine by worshiping the goddess Chandika. The purpose is restriction. People have given up all this restriction. Now they are regularly opening wine distilleries and slaughterhouses and indulging in drinking alcohol and eating flesh. A Vaishnavacharya, like Narada Muni, knows very well that persons engaged in such animal killing in the name of religion are certainly becoming involved in the cycle of birth and death, forgetting the real aim of life, to go home back to Godhead. Thus the great sage Narada, while instructing Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyas Muni, condemn the karma kanda, fruitive activities mentioned in the Vedas. Narada told Vyas, the people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy, and you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. This is very condemned and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. Srila Narada Muni chastised Vyasadeva for compiling so many Vedic supplementary scriptures, which are all intended for guiding the people in general. Narada Muni condemned these scriptures because they do not mention direct devotional service. Under Narada's instructions, direct worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as described in Srimad Bhagavatam was set forth by Vyasadeva. The conclusion is that neither the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu nor his devotee ever sanctions animal killing in the name of religion. Indeed, Krishna incarnated himself as Lord Buddha to put an end to animal killing in the name of religion. Animal sacrifice under the name of religion is conducted by the influence of tamaguna, the mode of ignorance. As indicated in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, yaya dharmam adharmam cha karyam cha karyam eva cha ayatavat prajanati buddhisa paratarajasi. And that understanding which cannot distinguish between the religious way of life and the irreligious, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, that imperfect understanding, O son of Prita, is in the mode of passion. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion, under the spell of illusion and darkness, and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Those who are involved in the mode of ignorance manufacture religious systems for killing animals. Actually, dharma is transcendental. As Lord Sri Krishna teaches, we must give up all other systems of religion and simply surrender unto him, sarva dharman parityajya. Thus the Lord and his devotees and representatives teach the transcendental dharma, which does not allow animal killing at all. At the present moment, it is the greatest misfortune that in India, many so-called missionary workers are spreading irreligion in the name of religion. They claim an ordinary human being to be God and recommend meat-eating for everyone, including so-called sannyasis. Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, entitled Attack by Chandabega on the City of Puranjan, Text Number 11. Narada Muni is displaying his natural qualities of a Vaishnava, the quality of compassion. The Lord descends to this world especially to deliver those who are fallen, those who are misguided and thus implicated in sinful activities. That is the general tendency of the entire human race within this material existence. Aham Bija Pratapita. But Krishna is the supreme father of all living entities. A son or daughter may forget, neglect, or even reject their mother and father, but the mother and father never forget. So Krishna, he is the supreme mother, the supreme father of all living entities. Therefore, even in this spiritual world where he is enjoying eternal pastimes, still he is very much concerned out of love and compassion for every single living entity who is suffering due to forgetfulness. And out of this love, he descends to this world. Yada yada hi dharma syagla nirbhavati bharata. Again and again he comes. The Bhagavatam explains, if we see from the point of view of the history of the universal creation, the avatars of the Lord are like waves in the sea. They come again and again and again. Why? Due to love, due to compassion. And the devotees of the Lord who are within this material world, they make their life the Lord's mission. Simply to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord, you could do that in the spiritual world. Yes? But to distribute the means by which all living beings can enter into those pastimes of the Lord is the special function of a devotee within this material world. So Narada Muni is one of the great acharyas of our parampara. Krishna instructed Brahma, and Brahma instructed Narada. And we find here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing how Brahma is instructing Veda Vyas. Because Veda Vyas, his whole mission as the literary incarnation of the Lord is that of compassion. He's so kind. He has given Vedic literatures that are systematically divided in such ways that actually everybody could make spiritual progress, somehow or other, from whatever level they're on. He has given the means for people in the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and the mode of goodness to be gradually elevated. But Narada Muni, being a pure devotee, wants people to have the chance to actually attain the only true perfection of life. Being such a crowded temple room, I think in the service of the Vaishnavas, someone should turn fans on. Does that make sense? Hari Hari. Huh? So, yes, Narada Muni, Prabhupada is explaining here, is chastising Vyasadeva. Could you imagine chastising Vyasadeva? This is not a small thing. Vyasadeva is literary incarnation of the Lord. He's already written the Mahabharata. He's compiled the four Vedas. Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. He's compiled the Upanishads, the various Puranas. Yes? Ready? And then he condensed them all into the Vedanta Sutra. And Narada is chastising him that you are misleading people. You are not giving people the whole, pure, unadulterated truth. And on the basis of Narada's instructions, Veda Vyas has written us Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Muni has approached King Prachini Barhishat very expertly. Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport that if he would have told the king that he was in Maya, the king would respectfully not hear him. Of course, these days, if you tell a king like this, he may have you arrested or killed. But King Prachini Barhishat was a cultured person. So Narada Muni, being a sage, he welcomed, he greeted, he offered him a special seat. But because of his false ego, he could not hear that he's wrong. It's very difficult. It's actually a very dangerous position to be in a situation where people listen to you. Huh? When nobody listens to you, that's relatively safe. But when people listen to you, when people take what you say very seriously, it's potentially a dangerous situation. Because then you're accustomed to thinking that you're right. You're accustomed to people accepting what you say. And when somebody says, you are wrong, it's very difficult for the ego to digest. Yes? When you're a little child, everybody tells you you're wrong about everything. Yes? Don't eat this, don't touch this, don't go here. So it's a little painful. But as you grow up, it becomes more and more painful when people tell you that you're wrong. Because the false ego becomes stronger. And that's really the test the test of your false ego. You know, how much you're actually humble. It's rare, but not so difficult to be humble in favorable circumstances. But in trying circumstances, in circumstances where you are being challenged, in circumstances where you will be apparently exposed as a fool, Haribo, then it's more difficult to be humble. And that's actually the test, whether you're really humble, whether it's just a superficial show, or whether there's some sincerity behind it. We were discussing the other night Srila Prabhupada's very beautiful statement, then one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. Now, one of the greatest of all qualities is humility. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Humility is one of the greatest of all qualities. It's so great that it conquers the supreme great. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about Rup Sanatan, Thakur Haridas, and other such Vaishnavas, that I am conquered by your humility. Your humility is breaking my heart. Haridas Thakur, when he was being beaten in those 22 marketplaces in Fulia, it was actually his humility. It takes tremendous humility to forgive people, to hold grudges, to be vengeful, is a symptom of false ego. That I'm right, that person is wrong, I don't deserve it, he deserves it, or she deserves it. That's false ego. But a humble person can easily forgive. Because a humble person thinks, I deserve worse. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evat mikritam vipagam. Whatever's coming is just a small portion of what I karmically deserve due to my previous misdeeds. That mentality is humility. If someone insults you and say, ah, I will cut your head off, that's not humility. If someone insults you and you say, thank you very much, I actually deserve more, but that is Krishna's mercy coming through you upon me, that is humility. And that type of humility attracts Krishna. Magnetic forces, opposites attract each other. Yes? So Krishna's great. Krishna's the supreme great. If you think you're great, you cannot attract Krishna. But the more you think you're Anudas, Das, 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 Anudas. Anu means atomic particle. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose that word, Anu, right? Very, very smallest possible particle. That's what type of servant of the servant. So when we think we're small, we attract the great. When we think we're great, we repel the great. That is a spiritual law. So, yes, it is very difficult for a person in a very high position who's giving orders to others to hear submissively. We could hear what we like to hear. That's not so difficult. Yes? Just like we see very many big people who are egoistic, powerful, politicians sometimes, big business people, who have great control over others. They like to go to pravachans or lectures where the speaker is telling them that you're very nice, everything is all right. Yes, you just do this little exercise and you will achieve the ultimate perfection. But when somebody like Prabhupada is coming and saying, you are a rascal, you are a mudha, you have to give up this and you have to give up that and you have to become humble. Sometimes they don't like these things. Swamiji, why are you speaking these things? Or even if they come, they listen out of formality, but they can't really hear. The ego has a certain mechanism that just turns off things if they get too much. Just like we have fuses or circuit breakers, where if the current gets too much, it goes, just turns off. Everything looks normal, but turns off. So similarly, the ego is like that. Yes, he's speaking very nice, but you're not listening what he's actually saying. So Narada Muni understood this. He wanted to penetrate the king's heart. So therefore he's giving an allegory. He's talking about someone else. Because people are accustomed to gossip, especially hearing about the faults of others. Yes, that's what society is about. People are very happy. If there's no scandals in the newspaper, the newspaper's boring. Yes? I mean, be honest. Even a devotee, if you pick up the newspaper, if there's no deaths and tragedies and scandals and exposés about people's illicit activities, it's really the... I mean, who wants to read about the weather in Bangladesh? And, you know, somebody, some politician inaugurated a factory here. It's not very, unless it's your factory, nobody cares about that. But when some famous person has just had a big scandal and it's being exposed, I don't like to hear that this has happened, but it's very interesting. Yes. So that is nature. So Narada Muni is dovetailing King Parachini Barhishat's propensities for his own purification. He's telling a scandalous story. Now, Narada Muni is dropping an indication here. He's not telling, Prabhupada says, he's not telling actually what his motive is. He's just giving an indication. He's priming King Prachini Barhishad. He's saying that he's performing these animal sacrifices for these materialistic purposes like you. Just two words. He just slips right in there. Like you. Which just kind of makes him a little more attentive. But really what he's talking is, this person is you. That will be understood at the end when it's too late. The hook of mercy is already deeply sunk in his heart. And he's on his way back home, back to Godhead. So this is mercy. Narada Muni is giving the actual standard of what a real preacher does. According to time, place, and circumstance, adjust things in such a way that the pure, uncompromised, unadulterated message is somehow or other made accessible and digestible to the common people. That is a very difficult art. Yes? Very difficult. Generally, either you're a fanatic and you're just all or nothing, surrender, or you're a demon. And then only a few fanatical people will come, or you just compromise everything. There's no need to tolerate anything. Tolerating is unnatural. We should just go with the flow. After all, God has given you a mind, and God has given you senses, and God has given you the world to enjoy. So enjoy, but just try to be a little more pious. And here are some recipes and various techniques by which you can enjoy better. Haribo. It's very popular. You can get hundreds and thousands and millions of followers. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, he could have gotten hundreds of millions of followers. But he didn't want to cheat people. Therefore, he spoke the truth. Krishna says, Matra sparshas to konteya sitosna sukadukada agama tamstatikshashva bharata. That you must tolerate. You must tolerate the onslaughts of the dualities of material nature. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Human life is meant for austerity. Human life is not meant simply to make a nice place in this world to enjoy. It's meant for self-realization. That's compassion. A compassionate person doesn't mislead people into the illusion that, yes, just live in this world and make it a nice place to be happy and be a little pious, and that's nice. After all, you're God. People like that. But ultimately, you're leading them to the road of suffering, of misery. Because it's not true. So yes, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke the whole truth and nothing but the truth. He spoke the actual essence of all knowledge, of all religion. How to surrender to God. Now, this idea of surrender is not a very popular thought. To be God, to enjoy, to just do what you're doing, be what you are. And the Prerna Festival, one student asked, do I have to follow a particular path, or could I just follow my path? This is a popular teaching now. Just follow your path. I asked them, what is your path and where are you going? And do you remember his reply? He had no reply. He had no idea what his path was or where he was going. Haribo. But dharma means... Sanatana Dharma means the path of surrender. Now, surrender sounds horrible to a person who wants to be God, who wants to be the enjoyer, who wants to be the controller. But it's actually the sweetest of all words. It's the most pleasing of all words to a person who has a humble heart. Yes? When a devotee surrender, it's so sweet. Just surrender. Give your heart, give your mind, your body, your words, your life to Krishna. Because you have faith in Krishna. Krishna's all beautiful. He's all merciful. When we hear Krishna's lovely pastimes, so enchanting, so extraordinary. We just want to surrender everything to him. We want to be his. We want to be an instrument of his love. It's the most beautiful thing. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam praja. For some, it's bitter medicine. But for a devotee, it's sweet nectar to surrender. So yes, Narada Muni is here teaching Prachinibarhishat the process of surrender by talking about someone else, by exposing the defects, the faults, and the destiny of somebody else. But actually, undercover, he's talking specifically about his audience. Hare Krishna. And here, Srila Prabhupada is putting great effort into describing the unfortunate condition of human society due to its rampant addiction to animal killing. Actually, Prabhupada explains, except for Buddhism, most all of the major religions of the world have sanctions for animal sacrifice. Yes? In the Vedas, Prabhupada is explaining the for people in the mode of ignorance, there is such sanctions that you can take a goat on the dark moon night, offer various mantras. One common mantra that you offer in the ear of the goat is, because I'm killing you now, you will have a chance to kill me in the future. Hare Krishna. And then you offer to Goddess Kali. And people consider it Kali Prasad. But actually Prabhupada said it's not Kali Prasad. Because Kali is Parvati. Kali is the consort of Shiva. And she takes the remnants of her husband. Yes? And Shiva is a great Vaishnava. So what happens to the flesh and the blood of that goat? Kali offers it to the ghosts who are worshipping her. So actually what you're getting is Bhuta Prasad. You're getting ghost Prasad. Hare Krishna. If you want to call it Prasad. Coming through Kali. So the idea is, people who are addicted to it, here is a restriction that will help you to gradually give it up. You don't restrict good things. Just like Lord Chaitanya said, kirtaniya sadahari, satatam kirtayanto mam. There's no restriction to chanting the holy name, because chanting the holy name is a good thing. In fact, in initiation, sometimes Prabhupada would ask the candidate, when they'd come up for their beads, he would, what are the regulative principles? They would state, how many rounds will you chant? And the devotee would very proudly say, Prabhupada, I will chant 16 rounds every day. And Prabhupada would often say, with much gravity, minimum. There is no maximum, minimum. According to Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Maya Devi was speaking to Haridas Thakur, he had a vow, minimum 300,000 names a day. Minimum 192 rounds approximately a day. But Maya Devi's observation was actually, that's just the minimum. Every day he would usually go way beyond that. He was always chanting. So yes, when the Vedas give strong restrictions It means it's a bad thing. It should not be done. But if you have to do it under these restrictions so that gradually you can give it up. In the Old Testament, in the New Testament, in the Holy Quran, there are so many descriptions for various types of animal slaughter, sacrifice, for purpose of usually getting some material gain, so that your harvest of crops is good, you perform this sacrifice. It's like Nanda Maharaj performed Indra Puja. But because he was a transcendentalist, this Indra Puja was in the mode of goodness. They were offering Indra gulab jamuns and all nice halava like that. They were not offering him horrible things. But for materialistic purposes, it is recommended in Vedas. It is recommended in practically all the scriptures of the world. And because we have a higher understanding of the science, we know that this is for people in the mode of ignorance. But today, practically the whole civilization on earth is centered around animal slaughter. India is one of the countries in the world that still has some preservation of a humane culture in this sense. But even it is diminishing here. When we brought up in the West, actually, I can tell you, until I was 18 years old, I never heard of a vegetarian. Did you, Maharaj? You never? They simply didn't exist. There's no such thing as a vegetarian. Because Prabhupada came and other people came from India and started preaching about these things, gradually it started spreading. Now it's becoming very popular for health purposes. And sometimes for humane purposes. There was a president of the United States some years back, and he wanted to have one dinner that was vegetarian. Yes? One dinner for vegetarian where he invited guests. And the meatpacking industry made such an enormous commotion that he practically would have taken him right out of office. That with all of our billions of dollars of industry and everything, we're going to destroy you, we're going to go against you if you have this dinner without meat. Because it's showing to the world that there's an alternative. Hare Krishna. So he canceled the vegetarian dinner. That's how powerful it is. But unfortunately, people are so conditioned, that they do not even know that it's wrong. They can't even conceive that there's anything wrong with it. This is to the extent that people have become covered over by Kali. It's very sad. Even good people, kind-hearted people, who are basically to other human beings very moral, very simple, very humble, very nice. The whole culture around them has conditioned them that they have no power to even conceive that there's anything wrong with it. That is how thorough Kali is performing his work in this age.
But actually, for devotees, it's so easy to give up. Yes?
For people of the West to give up illicit sex, it's not so easy. To give up intoxication is difficult. But to give up eating meat, once they take prasad, it's very easy. Yes? In fact, people join just to take prasad. Param drispani vartate, to experience higher taste.
So it is very important. Srila Prabhupada explained, we are not vegetarians. We are Krishnatarians. There is a difference. Because being a vegetarian is not transcendental. It's just the mode of goodness. But there are animals in the mode of goodness. Yes? There are so many animals that are vegetarians. Last night I was speaking with Shikshastakam Prabhu about dinosaurs. According to historians, there were dinosaurs that were vegetarians. Yes? Those ones with the big necks, huge. They would just eat leaves from the trees. Haribo. They're not going to go back to Godhead because they're eating leaves from the trees. There's so many vegetarian animals. Monkeys are vegetarians. Cows are vegetarians. Yes? Goats, they eat most anything, but mostly they're vegetarian. Buffaloes are vegetarian. So many. So being a vegetarian doesn't actually put you on the platform of human life. It is the pursuit of self-realization. Atato brahma jigyasa. Human life actually begins when we make serious inquiry into the absolute truth. But preliminary to actually understanding in such a way that we could realize God in our spiritual nature, we must first come to the mode of goodness. You cannot transcend the modes from passion and ignorance. The mode of goodness is the stepping stone by which you can transcend the modes of material nature. Therefore, to be sensitive to the suffering of others is essential. And that is why a devotee will never, ever, ever eat meat or in any way participate with such activities. Because it is cruelty. Actually, little children, they love animals. Yes? Sometimes little children love animals more than humans. Just like they have their little teddy bears. They go to sleep with their little animals, stuffed dogs and cats and bears and kangaroos. And the cartoons they watch are mostly animals. You know, mice and dogs and ducks. And they talk and they dance and they have so many pastimes. And they relate. They love their animals. But they do not understand. I remember I read a book by one lady, and this lady was actually one of the greatest proponents of vegetarianism in the West. And she explained how she became a vegetarian. She took her child to a zoo
where there was a little part of the zoo where nice, friendly, gentle animals that children can play with. And this child was playing with the little duck. Yes? Nice duck. And fell in love with this duck and asked mother, get me a duck. So the mother got her little daughter a duck, and the little girl was playing with her duck, and she was very, very fond of her duck. And one day, at the dinner table, the mother, the child was eating and said, mother, what is this we're eating tonight? She said, this is duck. The child started to cry. Started to cry. Mother said, what's wrong? So why are we eating ducks? I love ducks. I have my duck. This is probably a friend of my duck. Why are we eating? The little girl, she was about 5, 6 years old, challenged the mother, why are we killing and eating ducks when we love ducks? Hare Krishna. What was the mother's reply? She had no reply. She couldn't answer. She said, well, this is just what we eat. This is what everybody eats. And the little girl said, why? If we love ducks, why do we kill them and eat them? Why? Now, this lady was a professor. She's a professor in a college with a PhD. And she was defeated by a 6-year-old little daughter. She couldn't give a proper answer. Because factually, there is no proper answer. Just a few miles from New Vrindavan, there's probably 30 acres of land. Big, beautiful landscape, rolling hills. And do you know what it is? It's a cemetery for pets. Do you know what a pet is here? For animals. Dogs, cats, turtles. I remember my little brother. He had a turtle this big. His name was Lucky. And he loved that turtle so much. I shared the room with my brother, so therefore I had to share the room with Lucky also. So little Lucky would just turtle. He was only this big. He would just go. And when my brother would come, he would put his head out and look at him like this. And when I would go, he would put his head in. But he loved little Lucky. He would crawl on him, and he would want him to crawl on me, and I would just, you know. But he would just felt, that was like such sense gratification, having Lucky bless you with his little feet, you know, crawling up your body. And then there was a dog, Kippy. And my elder brother, he used to sleep in the bed with my elder brother. And all the other brothers were envious that why doesn't he sleep in bed with me? It was considered such an honor when he would come and jump in your bed. So this is American culture. And I remember Lucky died. Because, you know, eventually turtles die. Lucky died, and my brother was crying so much. He was weeping, he was mourning. And then the whole family, we had a funeral for Lucky in the backyard. They dug a grave, and my brother put him in a little box and put him in and buried and prayed to God for Lucky. Huh? Hari Hari. So it's natural for children
to love animals. It's natural. How is it that they're eating every day the very object of their love? They can't even connect the two. And by the time they grow up enough to even have the capacity to connect the two, they're so conditioned that they really just can't do it. They somehow or other just justify with no proper logic. It's just what everybody does. Blind lead the blind, and they all fall into the ditch. So the devotees, people spend fortunes to have funerals for their animals. Yes? But then every day, three times a day, they're eating animals. What does that mean? They're living in the darkness of ignorance. They're not seeing. That suffering, cruelty, and death is unnecessary. So here Narada Muni is about to teach what the future is of such animal killing. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya explains to Sanatana Goswami the story of Magrari. He was so cruel that he would not only kill the animals, but he would do it very slowly because he loved to see people suffer. Yes? Actually, even in our history, within the past 40, 50 years, 60 years, there were human beings who were, and even today, who kill other humans in the same way, with no concern. Killing millions of humans, tens of millions of humans, with no concern. No thought of how they're suffering. No thought of how their relatives are suffering. Just such hard-heartedness. A devotee sees that every living entity is a child of God. That every living entity is sentient and has the right to find happiness and be protected within this world. So Lord Chaitanya was describing Magrari. He was so cruel. He would kill the animals, but slowly, so that he could actually watch them suffer and take satisfaction. But then Narada Muni, out of his kindness, he revealed to Magrari what his future karmic destiny would be. Where all of these animals were coming back and getting revenge on him. Then he became sober. And by the grace of Narada Muni, he transformed to such an extent he would not even kill a single ant. So yes, when devotees like Narada Muni see these meat-eating establishments and this culture centered around it, it breaks their hearts. They want to do something about it. They want to make people aware of their horrible future. It's not because everyone does something and it's popular that it's all right. It's not that because everyone does it, there's no reaction. The laws of karma have nothing to do with popular vote. The laws of karma have to do with truth. So Srila Prabhupada, he taught us in the spirit of Narada Muni. He did not condemn people. He condemned activities and encouraged people. This was his expertise. When somebody came into his temples, he did not tell them, "You are a meat eater, you are going to hell. You are going to suffer for every drop of blood that was shed by the animals you eat." He would tell them, "Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Take nice prasad." But he would also tell them that you don't need to eat meat. These are the karmic reactions. And in this way, millions of people have given up these sinful activities because of his compassionate mood of preaching. A devotee should never think, "I'm better than you. You're wrong. I'm right. You should do what I say." That's not preaching. Preaching is to actually feel for the well-being of that person and present Krishna consciousness in such a way, without compromising the truth, that is accessible and digestible to a person. That is very important. That is why there is festivals like Rath Yatra. People addicted to all kinds of sinful activities could come and sing and dance and feast and associate with blissful devotees. Yes? Rath Yatra is not just people marching down the street with big placards, big signs saying, "Give up eating meat, you demon. Give up illicit sex, you animal." Huh? We could have parades like that. And it's true. But Prabhupada didn't have us do that. He had people dancing and smiling and singing and beautiful chariots decorated with flowers and big feasts and dramas and kirtans, entertainments, wonderful lectures. People become conquered by the culture. They become attracted. Their hearts melt. And once their hearts melt, then they naturally realize, "This is a very, very good thing. These people are wonderful. They're happy. I'm happy here. This prasad is good. The drama's nice. The dancing and singing is blissful. The darshan is wonderful. Yes, so nice." And they're open, their hearts, they're receptive. And then they hear, yes, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat-eating. That makes sense. There's a better way to live. So that is preaching. That is preaching. Prabhupada was so kind, he was so loving, that people would give up all their sins just to please him. He's such a kind man, obviously, because he has so much love and so much compassion. If he's telling me to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating, then it must really be for my welfare. So I will do it. And that's the process Narada Muni is giving us here. We have nice temples. Nice temples where people could come and feel spiritually stimulated. That these people, they keep things so clean, they make things so nice, not for themselves, but for God and for everybody who comes. This is something special. Why do people in all the great religions of the world, why is there magnificent temples built, even by the acharyas? Rupa Goswami built Radha Govinda temple. Sanatan Goswami built Madan Mohan temple. Ramanujacharya made his base in Sri Rangam, one of the most ornate, incredible, opulent temples in the history of the world. Ramanujacharya would perform much of his worship in Tirupati, Tirumala, such a beautiful temple. Yes? And in the Christian religion, such magnificent cathedrals all over Europe and America, and the mosques, the masjids in the Middle East. These were often inspired by very saintly people. Why? To give people a cultural experience. That yes, people are working so hard to make things so perfect and so beautiful and so nice for the glorification of God. And what's going on inside? Such compassionate, loving, caring people. They're dancing, they're singing, they're offering so many beautiful things to the deities. People take serious that type of devotion. Yes, their hearts open. It's an experience. And then when they hear no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no false ego, no sense of false proprietorship, Haribo, then the bitter medicine is digestible, tastes very sweet. Yes? As Srila Prabhupada explained, Krishna consciousness is the positive alternative. If we want to get people to give up their bad habits, we must give them something better. People love to gossip. Yes? So much gossip. But when they hear nice Harikatha in the association of loving Vaishnavas, then gossip is horrible. This is one of the ways you can understand you're making some spiritual advancement. That when you gossip or you speak false about another person, if you feel guilty and filthy, that what have I done? That means you're actually making some spiritual progress. And gradually you just won't do it anymore. But when you slip and fall and gossip about all things, fault find, criticize, you feel contaminated. That's good. Previously, when we did that, we felt ecstatic. Yes? I proved my point very nicely. Now, what have I done? So yes, the positive alternative, that is preaching. We must simultaneously teach people how to give up sense gratification and how to utilize their senses in a higher realm of spiritual activity. For those who do not teach the dangers of sense gratification and the importance of tolerating the mind and the senses, ultimately they're cheating people. They may be giving them something little more piety within the modes of material nature. But if we want to help people to actually transcend the modes of nature, actually even the real impersonalists teach severe tapasya. Today there's so many pseudo-impersonalists. You're God, be as you like. You know, when you eat meat, it's just Brahman eating Brahman, it's no problem. When you're drinking alcohol, it's just Brahman going into Brahman, it's all merging together, it's no problem. But Sripad Shankaracharya, he was very, before even talking about philosophy, take sannyas. Hare Krishna. So 99% of the impersonalists are not even real impersonalists. They're just wishy-washy, compromised pretenders. But if we want to transcend the modes of material nature, we must give up the desire for sense gratification and false ego. But to convince people to do that, Srila Prabhupada and Narada Muni are giving us. By attracting people to the higher realm of spiritual culture. It's beautiful. It's enjoyable. It's blissful. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Even though, yes, devotees, they suffer a lot having to control the temptations of Maya Devi. But at the same time, they're very happy because of their association, because of their spiritual activities. And gradually they're becoming purified and developing the higher taste. So let us examine very carefully the nature of what is real compassion. What is actual compassion? And follow in the footsteps of those truly compassionate beings. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is there any questions? Ekalavya Prabhu is back.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful class, Maharaj.
You always say that.
Can you please explain to us how we can develop these qualities of compassion that you're speaking of, how to cultivate compassion, how to recognize and cultivate compassion.
How to recognize and cultivate compassion. We must be educated to understand what is compassion. Srila Prabhupada is explaining so nicely in his books what is actual compassion.
Compassion is not just a sentiment, but it must be based on truth. If you have a disease, a doctor may have to cut you open to cure you. Yes? It's painful. It's painful to hear about. It's painful to experience. But it's compassion. If the doctor says, actually, you're all right, I'm all right, everything's all right, don't worry about it. Yes, then you find a little relief now by his kind words, but then you suffer and die. That's not compassion. So actual compassion begins by understanding what is the body and what is the soul, and what are the needs of the soul. Who am I? What is my nature? What is the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering is materialistic illusion, which creates attachments to the temporary. That is the cause of all suffering. And what is real happiness? The awakening of the loving propensities of the soul for Krishna. So we must understand what is truth. And to help people to come to the realization of that truth is compassion. And how to cultivate it? By following the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. By chanting the holy names, we awaken our natural compassionate nature. By hearing about great compassionate souls like Narada Muni, Vasudev Dutt, Srila Prabhupada, and all of our great acharyas, by hearing about them, we learn and become inspired toward a compassionate life. And by preaching as an instrument of the compassions of great souls in the proper spirit, that helps us to develop our compassion. Real preaching means to extend yourself, to make sacrifices of yourself for the well-being of another. That is part of the process of becoming compassionate. Hari.
Hi.
Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. I have a question that I've been thinking about for a while, and I wanted to ask you this question, somewhat related to your talk. What is humility and what is pridelessness in both definition and in expression? There seems to be a very strong overlapping, but then again, there is two different terms. How is it understood? The difference between, or what is the distinction in both expression and definition of humility and pridelessness?
Chandramali Maharaj has become very grammatical. You know better than me, Maharaj. They are inseparable. In one sense, pridelessness and humility are speaking of the same things, but from different points of view. One is speaking from a positive and one is from a negative. From the negative point of view, we should be without pride. Yes? Without false pride. From a positive point of view, we should be humble. Humility means ultimately to understand that Krishna is the ultimate doer of everything. Prakrite kriyamanani gunaikamani saravasha ahankara vimudatma karta hamiti manyate. That I cannot see, I cannot hear, I cannot think, I cannot speak, I cannot breathe, I cannot do anything without the help of God. So why should I take credit for anything? All credit should go to Krishna. That is humility. That means to be without pride. So from a technical point of view, you can make a very in-depth study, but from a practical point of view, to be humble means to be without pride, without false pride. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, I am most sinful, I am most fallen, I'm lower than Jagai and Madhai, I'm lower than a worm in stool. If someone hears my name, they lose their piety. If someone speaks my name, they become sinful. And he means it. Such humility. So for all practical purposes, to be humble means to be without pride, without being a sense of false proprietorship, without the illusion that I am the doer. So it is late, we will end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.